Greetings, fellow traveler. As humanity awakens and evolves, we see change in every aspect of our lives. Let's consciously manifest our desires. I am Candace Craw Goldman, and this is New Earth Journey.
Greetings. Today is August 18th, 2015, and this is episode 3 of New Earth Journey Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today's show is a very special one, and it's entitled Recovering from Autism. Now, if you're like me and have only indirect experience with this condition, you may not even know that such a thing is possible. I did not. And so I've invited my new friend, Jill Rege, to come on the show and talk about it. Jill is a writer, an educator, and an advocate. She's been in the special needs parenting trenches for more than 14 years. She has 3 boys, currently ages 17, 11, and 8. Her oldest son recovered from autism through extensive therapy and use of biomedical and dietary interventions. And this will be our prime focus today on the show. Her mission is to help support and educate other families who choose alternative treatments for developmental delays, seeing it as optimizing a child's potential through optimizing health. Her younger boys also have development delays and health issues, which she addresses through similar treatments and specialized diets. Prior to parenthood, Jill was a freelance and corporate marketing writer, editor, and webmaster. And she's currently co-moderator of the Autism Biomed Bay Area Yahoo group. She also co-chaired a Biomed Parents Support for several years through Parents Helping Parents in San Jose, California, for parents pursuing special diet and biomedical treatments for their children with autism. Jill is also a member of Team TMR, the fundraising arm of the Thinking Moms Revolution. Team TMR raises money to fund unrestricted treatment grants for kids with developmental disabilities, particularly autism, PDD, ADHD, sensory processing disorder, and others. Jill writes for the Thinking Moms blog under the name Zorro, and I'm going to have to ask her about that, how she got that. Jill has a master's in communication management and is currently enrolled in a bio-individual nutrition course in the process of becoming a nutritional therapist. Jill and I met this past June while on a wonderful tour in France, led by the incomparable, Kathleen McGowan. So I'd like to say welcome, my sacred France sister, to New Earth Journey Radio. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
This is going to be so much fun talking with you, Jill.
Okay.
I've really looked forward to this all week. But I want to start with talking just a little bit about our sacred France trip where we met. How did you end up on that trip? How did we end up getting to know each other all the way over there in Europe?
How did that thing happen that was always meant to be, right? I think I was first introduced to the concept of Mary Magdalene as Mrs. Jesus through the Da Vinci Code. And my interest was very piqued. There was something about it that resonated with me. And I started digging around online. I think my son must have been pretty little. He's 17 now, so I don't know what year I read that book.
Long time ago.
During that time, I'd get online and I'd noodle around and see what else I could find. And I remember stumbling across a self-published book about the Magdalene Line. And I bookmarked the page, and I kept going back to it, but I never bought the book. And then one day I was in the bookstore, and it's like, new bestseller. And I look at it, and I'm like, I swear I've read this introduction before. And I went home, and I dug up the bookmark, and sure enough, that was the self-published book by Kathleen McGowan that I had always thought about buying and pursuing, but for some reason I never did, usually because I have very ADD in tendencies when I'm online and I lose track of where I am, and I probably didn't keep the link in the place that I thought I had. But so I read Kathleen's first book, The Expected One. I absolutely loved it. Lots of truth bells ringing for me as I read it. Mm-hmm. And I just started from there reading other things, but I always came back to Kathleen's books. I have probably read The Expected One 6 or 7 times conservatively. I kind of read it every Holy Week now. Randomly a few years ago, I wanted to see if she was on Facebook, and I accidentally, on purpose, I don't know, sent her a friend request, and I didn't realize I had done that, and all of a sudden, she immediately accepted me, and I was like, oh my gosh, what did I just do? I'm like, well, okay, I'll be friends, and then I realized that she had like 3,000 friends, so I'm like, oh, okay. I see how this works now. And eventually I commented on her stuff enough that she would like recognize who I was. And we ended up having this little online Facebook friendship. Mm-hmm. And it's been several years. Mm-hmm. And then I started being aware that she would do these trips mm-hmm. to France. And I was like, oh my gosh, wouldn't that just be perfect? And I kind of set my intention that I was going to go on one of those trips. And I didn't know when it was going to happen. Money was an issue. Having small children with issues was an issue. And this last year, I had my big 50th birthday, and my husband asked, gee, what do you want? And I was like, well, you know, I've been really wanting to go on this trip. And I, you know, it just so happens I have this other friend who'd be really interested in going, and we could go together, but I would be up for doing this trip by myself. That's how much I want to do it. And I was like, yeah, that's a good birthday present. And that is how I ended up on the trip this year. So I had been eyeing it and thinking mm-hmm. about it for a couple of years.
Definitely. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we have something in common there and something completely not in common. So the part that we don't have in common is I didn't even know who Kathleen McGowan was. I know that's just sacrilegious right now, considering how important she is to me right now.
Wow. And how did you find out about the trip then?
Well, that leads me to the place where we have something in common, and that's our husbands. It was some weekend, and I'm standing in the kitchen just doing work, and the computer is on, and my good friend Suzanne Spooner texted me a question, and she said, how'd you like to go to France with me this summer? And I looked at the text and I just started going, bah, ha, ha. I just started laughing like hysterically in the kitchen. And my amazing husband, Tom, said, well, what are you laughing at? I was like, Suzanne wants me to go to France. And I'm just laughing. I can't go to France. And
all places.
And well, you know what? You know what he said? He's like, well, why can't you go to France? And I was like, Oh, really? Maybe I can go to France. So that part we have not in common is I didn't, or the part about knowing Kathleen, and then the part we have in common is our husband's support. So that's how I got there.
Interesting. So how was that? Was that like a 0 to 60 education for you, or?
I was reading The Expected One on the plane across the pond. So I was just, I was absolutely the delinquent of the 27 people in the group, for sure. I finished reading The Expected One when we were in the little jewelry shop at St. Marie de de la Mer. And I'm actually, it's a great memory for me, but I'm so glad that we got to know each other a little bit on the tour. And we did kind of because we had something in common, didn't we?
This is true. We are both gluten-free, which when people heard I was going to France, they were like, well, what are you going to eat? And did people have that reaction for you?
A little bit.
How can you go to France?
Our son had gone the previous summer to Spain and he had no trouble. So I went on the assumption it was going to be fine, but it was a little bit interesting, but mostly it was just the croissants, wasn't it? Wasn't it just the croissant envy?
Yes. That was fairly deep and profound, I must admit. Yeah. There was also the apple dessert at La Patate qui fume, qui fume, I don't know which one it is. But I remember they're like, okay, we're going to have this beautiful apple tart for everybody. And then for you gluten-free people, we have a baked apple with caramel sauce. And we're like, okay. And that was where my apple tart... my baked apple, I saw, you know, somebody decided halfway through the tour that they were going to be gluten-free, and I saw my dessert disappear. It was like, wait.
Yeah, that gluten-free... That gluten-free person who decided to be gluten-free in the middle of it all had our bread several times at breakfast.
Oh my gosh, I was so protective of my bread, and I would take half of it and wrap it in a napkin and take it with me for my lunch, which I'm sure if I was in a little restaurant, I know I got looks, but it was such a lovely gift to have. Mm-hmm. Gluten-free French bread that was really, really good. And, you know, and when they'd bring out the really, really good Breton butter, I had something to put it on. Except they wouldn't bring butter out at dinner, which was always...
That really was strange. No butter allowed at dinner. Well, the gluten-free stuff kind of ties into our subject today as far as diet goes. But at the time, Jill, you know, even though I sat behind you for multiple twisty and turny miles going up and down mountains, I really didn't know about your family and your children and this amazing story that you have about your son recovering from autism. I didn't learn about that until after connecting and communicating after we got back to the States. And it's such an astonishing story. And I would like for you just to tell it to us, if you would. You know, there are a lot of people like me who, you know, we think of autism as, well, probably as many medical professionals do, which is, you know, a diagnosis stop period. That's the end of the day. You kind of figure out how to deal with it. But that's not how you dealt with this diagnosis, did you?
No. So my son was diagnosed when he was four, like 2 days after his fourth birthday. And in hindsight, he could have been diagnosed earlier, maybe two and a half. He had a language delay. What language he did have was mostly what's called echolalia, which is basically repeating whatever he just heard. And with little kids, you know, when they're two and three and you say, do you want juice or do you want water, and they say water, and you give them the water and then they tantrum, you just chalk it up to a 2.5-year-old having a tantrum because they're prone to those, instead of him being frustrated that he really wanted the juice but the last word you said was water. And so he would repeat the last thing he'd heard back. So there was language, there was a little communication. He could use the word no quite effectively. But I'd say, I think he was in, I want to say second or fourth percentile for language when he was four. And he lined things up, he ran in circles, he toe walked, he flapped his hands, it was called stimming, for self-stimulatory behavior, where he would do a repetitive motion. For him, it was like laying on the floor with a Thomas train and running it back and forth in front of his eyes. other things would be jumping in one place over and over and over. He was 4 when we got the diagnosis. They said he was moderate to high functioning, which, you know, we just walked into it. We thought he had a language delay. We had no idea what that meant. And they said, okay, here's our family resource library, and please stay off the internet, which I thought was interesting in hindsight. So what we started with was, what we started with was the basic speech and language and things like that. And then one of the books I bought was called Unraveling the Mystery of Autism and PDD by Karen Cerusi. And that book changed my life. That was the book that outlined how she used diet to start with and then nutritional support. And
Jill, may I ask you, what's PDD? I'm not sure I know what that is.
Sorry. I don't want to sound like my husband said, sometimes when you get started, it's like drinking from a fire hose. And I don't want it to be like that. So I'm trying to be measured and speak clearly. So please ask me these things because I just fall right into my typical. PDD is pervasive developmental delay. And there's a blanket diagnosis called PDD-NOS, which is pervasive developmental delay not otherwise specified. Which, when they're doing an autism diagnosis, I'm going to get the numbers wrong, but I'm going to say, for instance, there are 9 categories, and if your child has 7 of them, it would qualify as autism. And I'm not using the correct number, so please nobody ding me on it. I haven't looked at the diagnostic criteria recently. And then PDD would be a child that has impairment across most of that, but it might not be severe enough for a full autism diagnosis. Mm. And so that's the way it's diagnosed is based on behavior.
Okay.
It's based on language development. It's based on what they call stereotypies, which are obsessive interests. We used to joke that Thomas the Tank Engine should have been included as a diagnostic criteria because it was so many of the little kids. Mm-hmm. It's 4 times as many boys as girls. Mm-hmm. And they're still trying to figure out exactly why that is. The diagnosis issue for us. We got started with things like speech therapy and a special preschool. And then, like I said, I found Karen Cerusi's book and read it and was like, oh, this is interesting. And I just wanted our days to not suck, to be honest. It was hard to go anywhere. It was hard. I couldn't make a quick run to the grocery store. I couldn't make a quick run to the library. We never went to story hour. We had very few, if any, play dates. The playground was just sitting in the swing for an hour, or then going and lining up rocks along the edge of the sandbox. So it wasn't fun for anybody. It was really hard, and he wasn't happy. And so I just wanted him to be happier. I wanted him to feel better. And lots of tantrums, super picky eating. And after reading this book, and it said take out dairy and wheat, and at the time I think my boy was living on bagels and chocolate milk. And I was kind of like, okay, I don't know how we're going to do this, but we're going to give it a try. And my darling husband was like, what? This doesn't make sense. No, I don't think this is a good idea. Well, he was traveling a lot and
decided to implement the plan after all.
During the week when he was out of town. And my niece, who lived nearby and would come over, had a milk allergy, like a frank milk allergy. So I already had some organic soy milk in the house. This was back before I knew that I don't really want to give little boy soy milk, but we switched him over to that, and that went fine. And I did not know the first thing about going gluten-free, and that was a little bumpier. But the first thing that happened was my son stopped running in circles. And for a kid who would spend, you know, a large portion of his waking hours running in circles, that was fairly significant.
Jill, how long did it take before stopping the milk and you noticing that he was stopped running in circles? I mean, how long was the lag time?
It was within a week.
Wow.
Definitely within a week. Because my husband came home, I remember, from his week-long trip and took Connor out on Saturday, and they go out for milkshakes for fun. And that evening, the circle running was back. And I was like, hey, you know what? I haven't seen this all week. Mm-hmm. And so it was more noticeable when it was reintroduced. And I was like, oh, hey, there was a big difference. Because, you know, yes, we still have all the lining things up. And yes, we still have the language delay and we have all these things. But we don't have the obsessive running in circles. And that was enough to give me a hint that there was something going on. And as I started kind of digging deeper, I was lucky enough to find a local parent group. It's one of those, it was meant to happen things. One of the parents had happened to have put up a little poster at the speech therapy office saying, hey, we're starting this new parent support group. And I went. I don't know how long the sign was up. Just happened to work out. I went, I checked it out. I had read the Karen Cerusi book, so we're like, okay, we've got this. And there were a couple of parents there who were a year or two ahead of me on it, and we're like, all right, this is what you can do next. And the most valuable support through this whole process was other parents. Mostly moms, but a couple of dads. Definitely. And you know, who those parents were changed. I ended up finding some online support groups as well. And that exchange of information. So I think it's very interesting that, you know, one of the things I was told to do is stay away from the internet.
Right. I was going to ask you about that because I bet that was one of your biggest research tools past the book that you've
Absolutely.
Been referencing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that was eye-opening. And at that point I was like, I just want to move forward. I cannot think about what happened. I don't, it's too hard to go there or think about it. A lot of self-blame, a lot of anger, a lot of what happened to my child, because my son did regress. He was a normally developing baby and hitting his milestones. And actually had a few words by the time he was one. And so he did regress. Actually, it was more like his development just kind of, you know, stopped at 16 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we looked back and his babysitter, this little Italian lady that I used to drop him off so I could finish my master's degree, she was like, you know, he doesn't talk as much as the other kids. So it's like, I had no idea because he was my first one. Most of my friends didn't have... You know, their little boys were either a lot older or younger, so I didn't have a one-to-one age match comparison.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so wasn't really sure what that meant or, you know, who do I go to get help? And we had, you know, three different pediatricians in three different states, you know, oh, no, he's fine, he'll outgrow it. And one thing I would like parents to understand is if you have any question at all, get it assessed, get it looked at, get it ruled out as early as possible. Because early intervention is like the magic key. And we missed probably 2 years of services through early intervention because we waited until my son was four.
So Jill, who's the best type of professional to first contact if you're just suspecting something for early intervention? Is it your primary care physician, or what would you suggest?
I think now primary care doctors are much more savvy because the rate of autism is much higher, and there are so many more kids. And I would like to point out that the state of California, almost 10 years ago, took a look at this, and it is not what's called diagnostic substitution. They're not taking the kids who would have been labeled as mentally retarded or otherwise developmentally delayed and labeling them as autistic. There really is an increase in the number of children with autism. There really is. If you ask teachers who have been teaching for 20 years or more, they will tell you that there really is a change.
A big percentage, isn't it? I mean, yes, it's huge. It's gone from in thousands to hundreds to what's the percentage now?
Even the CDC is saying it's like 1 in 88. Mm-hmm. And I think it's approaching 1 in 50 easily.
Right.
Which means if it's four times as many boys as girls, we're talking 1 or 2% of our boys. And then that doesn't include the kids who don't quite qualify for a diagnosis. They're still these kids who fall in the gray area with attention issues or what they call sensory processing issues, where their little brains just don't take in the information, process it, and send out the right signal.
Mm-hmm.
Noises are either too loud or too soft. They either need to crash in things to feel a connection, or they don't want to be touched. It can be a wide range,
mm-hmm.
But it's a dysregulation of sensory systems, and that includes taste, touch, hearing.
What does your gut say is possibly the cause? I mean, there's something about our modern society, doesn't it seem? And I know I'm not trying to put you on the spot,
no,
but you must think about this.
I think about this all the time. And I know every so often, people want it to be one thing. And for a long time, it was like, oh, it's the vaccinations. And I think for many kids, the vaccinations or a vaccine or a virus or an antibiotic or an illness together is, it's kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. I kind of think of it as total load, total toxic load, total immune system load. And you have to keep in mind that the brain is a part of the body. It is connected to the body. And it's not, there is something called the blood-brain barrier, which helps protect the brain. But if that's not super strong and super intact, which if there's a lot of inflammation, things can get past it. And we also know that what goes on in the gut affects the brain. And they've also recently discovered that there are actual physical structures, I think they're called lymphatic vessels, that are part of the immune system that are connected to the brain.
I read that article, absolutely.
That's new science. Yeah, and they had to change the way they did dissection to find it. I think they were always just like cutting right through it and not seeing it, and then they were like, well, it may have been a question of function, like, wait, there's this function. We need to find how this function might happen. And so they dissected a brain a little differently, and oh, look at this thing that we've just been packing right through, and it's actually a part of the immune system that is connected to the brain. So it's all connected. The brain isn't in this separate black box, separate from the body. And a healthy brain is part of a healthy body. And I think a lot of what goes on in this society, in this world today, with the toxins and the funky food and, mm-hmm. frankly, the sheer number of vaccinations and how early they're given.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if people are aware of how many shots little kids get now. And one shot might have four things in it plus adjuvants, which stimulate the immune system. So you'll think your kid's getting three shots, but they're actually getting 7 or 8 antigens. Mm-hmm. And we're like, well, we're fine. Well, we only had 10. We're not right. having 27 or 30. So
right.
that's so
big difference.
I do believe it's biologically plausible that that's the final straw for a lot of kids. Also, I think prenatal care, I think it goes back to prenatal care. I think it goes back to medicalized birth. There, you know, anecdotally, and I just want to say, I know people go, oh, anecdotal, ha ha, it's not scientific. But you have to start somewhere, and those hypotheses are not pulled by scientists out of thin air. They have a question, and they might say, well, hey, I have a lot of patients complaining to me about XYZ. Let's take a look at it. And so anecdote does have a place.
Yes,
in
it does.
Scientific process. It's
Jill,
at the very beginning.
Can I uh-huh. ask you a question about the vaccines? Because I sure. wondered before your son's diagnosis, I did read the article, and I did know that and I realize and remember that you said that your child was fussy after the vaccines, and you knew
yeah.
that you had to take time off to care for him because you just, you know, you
yeah.
just knew what his reaction was. But I wonder how you felt about the whole concept. Did you, before all of this happened, did you just think this is what we do and this is taking care of our child?
Absolutely. I was a true believer, and we were at a pediatric practice that was tied to Harvard Medical School. And so, you know, and I was
wow.
very proud of that. And
I
was very happy to be right in the thick of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we were part of our medical practice that was very diligent about being on time every time with every shot.
Right.
And I was, and I had flu shots just before and just after I got, just before and just after, not delivery, but just before I became pregnant and just after I delivered.
Right.
And what else? So, yeah, I
so
knew that he would react.
You're not getting flu shots now, Jill?
I no longer get flu shots.
I know.
Yeah. I don't. I load up on vitamin A, E, D and C. I take a really high dose of vitamin D3. This is what I do for me. And I also use elderberry syrup.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple other things that I do and I give to my kids and my husband. And I work with a naturopath, and I haven't been sick with the flu, knock wood, for probably 7 years. I'll get a bad cold. I mean, maybe it's a flu, but it's not wiping me out mm-hmm. the way things used to.
So Jill, let's boil it down for those who might be listening out there.
Mm-hmm. And people rolling their eyes at me. Yeah.
They're not, and I know that it's not a one shot thing, and it's not just a single thing, and that this has been a process for you. But
right.
you seriously claim that your son has recovered from this condition and he is operating as a normal 17-year-old right now.
Correct.
How did this happen? What did you do? What were the big changes, the big things that turned this around for your family?
Okay. First was special diet. We did do that gluten-free, casein-free, which casein is a protein in milk. Gluten is a protein in grains, particularly wheat and rye, triticale, spelt. And I have had people say, oh, you know, gluten didn't make my kid autistic. So I was like, no, what I'm trying to do is remove barriers to function. I'm trying to help function improve. And those things helped. And I don't know if it was because we had allergies I don't know if it was because it was an allergy driven. I don't know. It worked. We took those things out.
Mm-hmm.
Function improved. And then we would go through and do healing diets. I tried removing grains. And ultimately what we got down to was a gluten-free, casein-free, soy-free, corn-free diet. For a little while, we were egg-free. And then as my son healed, we were able to add things back. He's 17 now. He is mostly gluten-free, but he tolerates dairy now. So, but what else do we do? We started working with physicians. Back in the day, we called them Defeat Autism Now practitioners. I believe the new term is MAPS, M-A-P-S. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that stands for because I'm kind of old school. And I still refer to our doctor as our Dan doctor. And with him, we have one local. She started practice when my son was maybe 10. And then we go up to Oregon from California. We would fly up to Oregon outside of Portland 3 times a year to go see the good doctor. And we would look at nutritional status, digestive issues. We would look at what his mineral balance was. We looked at vitamin status.
So very much focused on the intestinal health of your child is the thing that you focused on primarily to get him back to what we would call normal functioning as a child. Mm-hmm.
And then one of the other things we took a look at was my son had developed a lot of food allergies, like a ridiculous number of food allergies. And we decided to say, well, what's his immune system doing? And one of the first things the doctor did was he ran something called titers, which is an antibody count against a lot of common viruses, as well as illnesses or things you were vaccinated for. So like Epstein-Barr was one of the things we looked at, and it showed that yes, my son had been exposed, but he had mounted an immune response and it was normal. And then we went through another thing, and for my son, measles was off the charts. And when I mean off the charts, it came with a note from the director of the lab saying, this is as high as our equipment could count with confidence. It was probably higher. Please run this test again in another 6 to 8 weeks. And we did, and it was still high, but it wasn't as high. And to the point that my son had immunity for, 8 people. It was rather extreme. So for that, we did under the direction of our physician, and he was a physician, we did a high vitamin A protocol for 3 days and then did some herbal antivirals. And that helped bring those numbers down.
Wow. So what do you make of that? Does that mean he contracted measles, that was from the vaccinations?
We don't have an answer. Mm-hmm. it could very well have been either. Because we never did a scope and then got a piece of tissue and had it analyzed, I can't say for sure. Mm-hmm. Do I suspect it was the MMR? Well, sure. But I can't say for sure that that's what it was because we didn't do the scope. We almost did the scope, but I really did not want to put an 8-year-old through that if I didn't have to. And in that instance, we avoided scoping our son from both ends with acupuncture.
The whole Chinese medical model, doesn't it talk a lot and focus on intestinal health for immune strength? I mean, that's really interesting.
And Ayurveda does as well. I think everybody but Western,
right?
We don't talk about digestion. Everything's a stomach ache. Yeah, I got a stomach ache. I had to get over my discomfort talking about those things because people will say, "Oh, well, I have this kid. I don't know if I should do the diet." And my first question is always like, "Well, how's his poop?" And they're always like, "What?" I'm like, "How did you know to ask that question?" I'm like, "Oh, honey." trust me. And then I'll have people tell me that their child has no gut problems, but, you know, but they haven't had a formed poop in 6 years, or they have to take them to the emergency room to have them, you know, flushed out, or, you know, it's like those qualify as gut problems. But anyway, so some of the other things we did, it's very controversial, but we did chelation for heavy metal toxicity because my son had tested for high heavy metals. He had high lead.
Wow.
He had high mercury, and he had aluminum. And so we did not do an IV. We did an oral treatment, and then he started to not handle that very well because it caused dysbiosis, which means overgrowth of the bad gut bacteria. We took a break. We got him healed up on that, and then we got a transdermal, a lotion that we used for over a year, and that got a lot of stuff.
Where do you think some of the aluminum and lead and the other heavy metals came from? And the environment, you know, or environment, what?
Totally environment. I think he got some of it from me. I think we are also, we are poor detoxifiers. One of the things we did was 23andMe, a little genetic testing. And we are not great at detox. And he doesn't make as, there's a, the master antioxidant in your body is called glutathione.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very important to your immune system, and it is very important to detoxification. And it's a heavy sulfur molecule, and it's good for everybody. Everybody needs it. And he and I, actually I haven't run my husband's, but he and I don't make a lot of glutathione. It's like you can have... Every car has a different kind of engine, and, you know, some mm-hmm. people have the big Hemi engine, and then some people have, you know, just a little Honda motorcycle engine, and we got the lawnmower engine producing glutathione, but you don't know until you look under the hood. And if you have a lawnmower engine running your detoxification system and you encounter a heavy toxic load, you're just not going to clear it. And those things get put in your tissues. The lead goes into your bones, mm-hmm. and the mercury goes into your brain and fatty tissue.
So, Jill, as you're talking, you know, you're saying we, and of course, because mm-hmm. you're this child's mother. So how are these things, if this was manifesting in your son as autism symptoms or the condition we know as autism, how mm-hmm. were these things manifesting in you, in your body?
Yeah, chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
And my family has a lot of not great health. My mom has fibro. My sister has chronic fatigue. I have chronic fatigue. I will have episodes that look like fibromyalgia with a lot of pain. But my biggest issue is fatigue and something called post-exertion malaise. I don't bounce back from exertion the way normal people do. I had a doctor describe it. It's like you get a banana in your tailpipe. It just backs you up. My engine overheats, and then I shut down. And I'm like, thank you, doctor, for that nice visual image, because now I'm like, what? But I just can't tolerate. I can't tolerate heat. I can't tolerate climbing up Mount Segur. I can't, which I didn't do. That was the day I sat down with my leftover gluten-free bread from breakfast and sat in the shade and had cheese and homemade lemonade.
So let me ask you then. So so these treatments, these nutritional supplements, and this dietary stringency, when applied to you, has some of your own symptoms abated or not so much?
Oh, yeah. I would be in much worse shape if I didn't do all of the things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
If I ate wheat, I don't think I would be able to get out of bed if I ate wheat.
Mm-hmm. But so yes. Let me ask you this. Well, let's go back to France on this one, because mm-hmm. I think my husband said this to me more than once. And he said, you know, I wonder, since they don't have the GMO wheat over there, I wonder if you would have had the croissant, what it would have done. And I was like, it was beautiful. That croissant was beautiful. And I just couldn't. I was, you know, I didn't want to go there.
No, yeah. I couldn't risk it. Because, for me, one of the things that happens when I eat wheat is head-to-toe pain. Mm. And I feel like I got hit by a truck. And I did not. I knew I was going to miss out on some of the trip anyway, because I just mm-hmm. don't have the stamina that other people have. And I had to watch my energy expenditure very carefully to make sure I didn't crash energetically. Because if I did, that would be it. I would be missing the rest of the trip of a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I felt great on the trip. I never had a single stomach ache. I was so happy. And I came home and I don't know what I ate. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the first stomach ache I've had in 2 weeks.
You know, there's something about that, isn't it? You know, I really saw a difference between the French food and the American food. And it just, it hurts my heart so much that we here in America do this with our food. It's shameful.
We're so proud of cheap food, and we're so proud of cheap, crappy food, the all-you-can-eat and the
giant portions.
The giant portions, yeah. And, you know, go get a roast for $1.50. And I think that has done us such an enormous disservice. I think, you know, we're not healthy. We don't have the greatest health outcomes in the world. Obesity and chronic illness and heart disease and all of these things that, you know, we may be living a long time, but also a lot of people are living a long time in pain mm-hmm. or in discomfort or not able to live fully. I also think, this is me and my nutrition thing, the crappy oils we eat mm-hmm. are affecting our mental health and mm-hmm. For me, it was interesting because I've had people say, oh, well, it's because you were on vacation and you weren't stressed. And it's like, no, you don't understand. I am a very anxious person. And for me to leave my little bubble and travel halfway across the world by myself to get to a hotel in a country where I barely speak the language and, you know, get myself checked in and find myself a room, this was very stressful. this was not vacation. The vacation part didn't happen for me until a couple of days in, and I got on the right time zone and I felt more at ease. So that, you know, oh, you're on vacation, it wasn't stressful. I'm like, it was stressful. I coped,
sure it was.
But it was stressful.
It was a great time, but I tell you what, we didn't sleep much.
No. And the gentle ascent up Mount Baum, things like that. There were some of the hikes were really rigorous that were hard for me. And there were a couple things that, like the last one, I had to sit out of because I knew I wasn't going to be able to recover from that one. It was just going to, I'm like, yeah, going to bed for a whole day just wasn't on the itinerary.
Right. Not, no room for that.
Yeah, but otherwise, the whole experience was really great. I also felt like, I don't know if you experienced this, but it helped me kind of step up for the next phase of my life.
Oh my gosh, did it ever.
Yeah.
It was fantastic good. in that regard. Well, let's get back to wrapping up at
sure.
least a little bit about what you might like to tell our listeners who may have a recent autism diagnosis in their family. You know, maybe some points to consider that, you know, that were hard won for you that you might like to offer for others as we're heading up towards the top of the hour. What are some of your best tips for the new autism mom?
Okay. Best tips. One, don't freak out. Two, one of the phrases I want you to get out of your mind, this will probably strike a chord, is, you know, God only gave this to me because I could handle it. Just don't go there unless that's definitely your life raft, because there's something else. There's a really big thing going on with this, and this is kind of an all hands on deck, and this is how it can be really hard. It can, you know, your child is the gift. Please keep that in mind. Your child is your child, and your child is wonderful and perfect. You're just trying to help your child. And the world can be complicated and difficult, and there are many options. So, you know, sit with your intuition on a lot of things, even though it can be hard when you're really stressed out. That's one. Another, I strongly believe that there are biological underpinnings to autism. Very strongly, this has been my experience. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical practitioner. I'm a mom who has spent 13, 14 years on this and living it, breathing it. My son is not the only kid I know who has recovered. And when I say recovered, you know, my kid is, we're, you know, taking off to go look at colleges in Portland tomorrow.
He's, congratulations.
Thank you.
What a coup. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And that's so wonderful.
I started this looking for 1% improvement. 1%, 2%, that was all I was looking for on a day-by-day basis. So that's what added up. ThinkingMomsRevolution.com is a good place to go.
Yeah, please tell us a little bit about that, your involvement with that group.
Yeah, that group started 24 parents. I think it's one dad and the rest are moms, started this a couple of years ago. They have a blog, they wrote a book, and then about almost 2 years ago, they put a note on their Facebook group saying, hey, anybody have recovered kids they want to write about? And I was like, oh, me, pick me. And I got to write a chapter. I know, I was like, oh.
Well, Jill, you're a fabulous writer. I would like to tell, I know, we're going to say it anyway at the end of the call, but we're just about there anywhere.
Oh,
anyway,
know,
you write in several places, but one is Recovery Road. That's RD, recovery, and then RD.com.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And just a fabulous writer.
I
am so touched and engaged by your words. And then also you write for the Thinking Moms, correct?
Yes. The Thinking Moms have a blog, and I write as Zorro. And one of the original Thinking Moms, I want to say she goes by Tex, because she's from Texas. We were the new 2.0 came in, and we're like, how do we get names? Do we pick our names? And I go, no, Tex is going to give you your name. And I was like, oh, but she doesn't know me. And I was kind of confused about that. And we were just kind of exchanging information, and I posted a picture of my son. And she came back. She's like, oh, he looks like Tyrone Power. He looks like Zorro. You're Zorro. And that was how I got Zorro. And I was I sat with it, and I was like, you know, I'm in California. I have a point to make. I write, you know, the pen and the sword. And I do go up against the big... What's the word I'm looking for? The man.
The machine.
Go up against the machine. Not exactly rage against the machine, but, I rail against the machine, I guess.
Right.
So,
hey, Jill, I just had a question come in here on my chat, my little chat thing over on this side. And the question is, it's a really interesting one. I wondered if you might tackle that. The question is, does your son remember what it was like to be autistic?
Yes, he does.
What does he say about that?
He says it was hard and it wasn't fun and it was stressful. And he does not like to talk about it a whole lot.
Wow.
I will say, you remember what that was like? And he'll say, yeah. And the way he says it, it's like it doesn't really
break. It's over.
Further it's conversation.
Over.
And he's
relieved.
Moved
on.
We've had instances. Like, we took a flight together, and it was about 2 years ago, and there was a little boy across the aisle who was very clearly autistic. I mean, once you know what it looks like, it's everywhere.
Right. Sure.
And you can see it, and it's, I just see it everywhere. So there was this little boy, and he was having trouble, and he slapped somebody, and his mom didn't apologize. She was like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, here's this 6-year-old who's wearing a diaper and a t-shirt. and no shoes and no pants, and has spent the entire flight blowing up balloons. And my son got really upset, and he was like, doesn't she know that there's something she can do? I'm like, she might not. Right. Or somebody's told her, no, there isn't anything you can do.
Right, and she believed it.
And she believed it, and she stopped. It doesn't work. There are no guarantees. It doesn't work for every kid. But I want to say that one of my thinking mom's friends, she has a 12-year-old who was nonverbal until this year. He now puts 3 and 4 words together.
Wow.
And he's 12. And I mean, for her, you know, she cries every time he says something. And so I just want to say improvement is always possible. No matter where your child is, improvement is possible.
Well, you've been quite an advocate for your son, and not only just for your son, but for others out there who are going through the exact same thing or very similar things, and you just weren't going to give up for your kid. And
I was so stubborn about it. It's true.
Well, I admire you so much, and I want to thank you so very much for coming on to New Earth Journey Radio and talking about this today. Jill, you are my sweet, sacred sister, sacred France sister, and I'm so glad I met you, and Elle, the beautiful Elle, who was like your glamour assistant and bodyguard and partner the whole trip, and I had so much fun getting to know both of you. And
ends of the glamour spectrum. I show up with a colored lip balm and a mascara, and she's like, "Hello, let me do you over."
Thank you so much, and I'll be talking to you online and elsewhere. And I want to thank you all for joining us, listeners. Thank you. Please join us in 2 weeks. I'll be chatting with Michelle Walling of N5D.com about all the talk and interest in what is happening cosmically this September and October with the phenomenon known as Wave X. Until then, join me in imagining peace in the world, and all shall be well.